It's the Naked Scientists with Dr. Chris, Dr. Dave, and also Richard Van Norden is here this week. And it's now time to find out the answer to that intriguing kitchen science that Dave had for you earlier. Dave, just give us a little roundup as to what you asked people to do.
I asked you to get hold of a really short piece of tubing, like a piece of hose pipe or maybe a marker pen lid, and two largish balloons. Blow one of them up so it's just starting to expand. Twist it off to keep the air in. Put the other balloon over the end and then let the air out and see what happens.
So hang on, so put the other balloon over the other end of the bit of tube, then untwist the balloon that you've got the air trapped in, and see what happens. So go on then. I mean, our prediction would be, you just think it would equalise one on the other. Would you agree, Richard?
Yeah, I would think the air would move to the other balloon.
You'd get sort of a dumbbell-like
a dumbbell,
thing.
Yeah.
Okay, go on, Dave.
Okay, so we'll do it. So
I'm totally overwhelmed by nothing happening, actually.
Yeah, it's somewhat more of a net null result rather than an exciting thing happening.
It's really, really odd, because the balloon which you put all the air in to start with has stayed blown up. And the other one is just a little tiny bit blown.
Yeah, it's sort of blown up, sort of just so it's full, it hasn't stretched at all. And if I try and squeeze the air from the big one to the small one, it kind of squeezes across, and then at some point...
And it starts to deflate itself.
Yeah, it suddenly starts squeezing air from the small one into the big one.
Without any more help from you?
Without any more help from me. I go back again, and the same thing should happen.
That's uncanny. So why is that happening?
Okay, so it's all to do with two things which are going on. You may have noticed that if you blow up a balloon, it's really hard to start blowing it. Then once you get beyond a certain point, it gets very easy. So what's happening is the small balloon is at the point whereby it's really, really hard to blow up, whereas the bigger one is in the point where it's easy. So the pressure in the big one is, because it's quite easy to blow up, that means the pressure must be quite low. So the pressure in the big one isn't big enough to blow up the small balloon where it's really, really difficult. Now, the reason why this happens is two things. One is that rubber has got quite a strange thing. If you ever pull a rubber band, it's actually more difficult to stretch at the beginning than at the end. It gets difficult to stretch and it's easy and it's difficult. It gets easy again because as you stretch, it gets thinner, so there's less rubber to stretch, so it's easier to stretch.
And that's why you're seeing this big balloon losing the battle against the small balloon.
Yeah, that's half of it. And the other thing is that if you've got something small, it tends to be much more curved. And if something's very curved, then if you pull on two ends of a curve, if you've got a piece of rope between you and me, and then Richard tried to pull it, if it's really straight, it's very hard for us to pull against him if he's trying to pull it sideways and try and bend that rope. So the pressure's so it's a bit like the air, it's going to be very easy to bend it, so it's going to be low pressure. But if it's very curved, it's going to be much easier for us to push against him, so there's going to be high pressure.
So how does this apply to the real world? Where would you see this manifesting in the world around us?
One thing is to do with the way foams develop, because foams are little bubbles of air, which are basically like a balloon, but with water on the outside, and water's got surface tension, so it's trying to compress these bubbles. And so small bubbles are at a higher pressure than big bubbles. So air inside small bubbles tends to move to big bubbles. So the bubbles in foam tend to get bigger and bigger and bigger until eventually they get huge and the foam disappears.
I suppose one very obvious sort of analogue of this is in the human lung, because the air spaces, the alveoli, have to have surfactant, which is a chemical that stops the water from sticking to itself on their surfaces. Otherwise, they collapse very, very, very quickly when they're small. And this is a problem for premature babies because they don't have that surfactant.
So they're basically like really, really tiny bubbles. So they're trying to get smaller very quick, with very high pressure, trying to shrink them, yeah.
Is this a similar way to the way in which chairs that are pneumatic, like the one I'm sitting on, that you can pull the handle, it goes up and down? Is that how they work? Because with your added weight on it, it helps it to sink, but otherwise it comes up.
I think they've also got a spring inside them. So there's a spring inside a cylinder. When you close the valve, then there's air, it's sealed, so there's air in there. So if the valve is closed, then it acts as a strong spring because you've got air in there and the spring. When you let the valve out, then you've just got the weak spring, so you can go down.
Thanks, Dave. I really enjoyed that. If you want to find out more about that experiment and how to do it and the science behind it, it's on our website at nakedscientist.com/kitchen science. Now, Nicholas is on the line. Helen.